Of the December. Let me start over. I'd like to call this meeting the December 21st, 2023 of MetroCog. A little disclaimer here. This meeting of the December 21st, 2023 Fargo-Moorhead Metropolitan Council of Governments Policy Board is being broadcast via Zoom. Remote attendees are reminded to keep their microphones muted unless they are speaking to prevent feedback and echo effects. Remote attendees wishing to speak are asked to please use the raised hand icon and to identify themselves before speaking. If anyone experiences any technical difficulties, please let Savannah know. That will do introductions, and I'll call out by each entity here. Cass County. Representatives from Fargo.
Denise Kolpak, City Commissioner.
Dave Pepcorn, City Commission.
City Commission.
Rocky Schneider with Fargo Planning.
John Gonkelman, Fargo Planning.
It's everybody from Fargo. Dilworth.
Julie Nass, City Council.
Thanks, Julie. West Fargo. I'm not going to forget you. Brad Holt, City Commission. Horace.
Jeff Trudeau, City Council from Horace.
Moorhead.
Jeff White, Moorhead City Council.
Sebastian McDougall, Moorhead City Council.
And Chuck Hendrickson, Moorhead City Council. And I think we can go staff next.
Paul Dermott, MetroCog. Aiden Shackler, MetroCog.
Adam Holzberg, MetroCog.
Jaron Katz, MetroCog.
Dan Barnes, MetroCog. Michael Madsen,
MetroCog.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Did Griffith MetroCog?
Is that everybody? Anybody else? Did I miss the city again, or are we good?
Oh, Chelsea Leverson from MetroCog as well.
Thank you. With that, that brings us to agenda item number 1B, approve the order and contents of the overall agenda.
Hello.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. And the agenda is passed. Brings us to 1C, the approval of the November 16, 2023 meeting minutes. Any changes or additions to that? If not, I'm looking for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. And the meeting minutes for November 16th are approved. Brings us to agenda item 1D, approve the December 2023 bills. Any concerns with those? Questions? Not, I'm looking for a motion.
Motion to approve the bills by Nash.
I'll second, Dave.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. And the December bills are passed. Brings us to agenda item number 2, consent agenda. Any concerns or questions about the consent agenda?
Grant moves approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. And this is in yellow, so we'll do a roll call.
Just clarifying, McDougal, was that you that made the second?
Correct.
Thank you. Right. Gunkelman?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Kolpak?
Aye.
McDougal?
Aye.
Nash?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Pepcorn?
Aye.
Preston?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
You? Schneider?
Aye.
Strand?
Present.
Trudeau?
Yes.
And White?
Yes.
Did I miss anybody?
Good. And consent agenda has passed, which brings us to agenda item 3A, public comments or opportunity. I don't see anybody online.
Nope.
Anybody in the room? If not, it brings us to 3B, the 2023-2024 UPWP Amendment number 5, and I believe that's you, Ben.
It is. Just a second.
So here we go. All righty. It's at the end of the year, we usually have an adjustment amendment for our work program. And this year we had a couple of items. There's a four page memo in your packets, and there's a couple of tables. On the first page is a table that shows staff hours and how we adjusted our staff hours a little bit to keep within our overall amount. And we were able to do that. We were actually a little bit under because we had a position that was vacant for almost 3 months. And also there was that 1 week gap between when Cindy retired and when I came on board. So there's a more detailed breakdown on page two that provides a per category, per work program area, and provides a little more breakdown on that as well. On the third page is a breakdown of our overhead budget, and you can see we were over in some areas and in other areas we were under. The main areas that we were over were our IT, our information systems. You know, we purchased the software that we had. We knew we were going to have to purchase the software, but we also purchased some additional software, and specifically the Urban SDK software that we thought we were going to drop. We decided to keep that because they have new modules now that integrate nicely with our streetlight data, and we can use that for a lot of different applications. And Jaron's been able to tease a lot of data out of that makes those two applications work well together. The other area where we were over was with our insurance, you know, with changing in staff, and also with our audit. You know, we're required to do a financial audit every year, and we were a little bit off in that, so have that adjusted. And also for our regular accounting services, we missed a percentage on that. So that's all to be taken into account. We had an estimated $119.23 remaining, and that accounts for the $4,577.14 in the 800 series A through R. It also includes the $2,036.94 from 801 A and B. And then what it also does is subtract $6,494.85, which was recruited this year. And we had not budgeted for that. So we had a couple of applicants that we paid for airfare and hotel stay while they were there. So it added up pretty quickly. So the last item we have is for our projects and our 23-24 projects. And the last, there's a spreadsheet that's attached. I believe it's the next slide. One more slide. So this spreadsheet was attached to the memo, and what this shows, and I know it's kind of hard to see this, but it was in your packet as well. We've shifted all of our 23 projects over to 24. The ones at the top, not at the very top, but about in the middle where there's kind of a break in between there, are the projects that have carryover amounts. And you can see those amounts kind of outside of the spreadsheet there just to have a running total. And then below that are the projects that are already programmed for 2024. The carryover amount is estimated at $812,273.62. We have a little concern with this, and this is why we're doing this amendment, because our contract amount doesn't seem to cover this amount. The contract amount was based on North Dakota DOT's calculations using the original work program that was adopted in 2022. So they've not caught up with some of our work program amendments. For instance, the one we just did last month has been submitted, but they've not acted on that one yet. So there's a few of those. Also, if y'all may recall, at the end of May, Cindy had prepared a second amendment as she was leaving, and that came before y'all in May and was transmitted to the DOT. And that carried a total of eight projects. four of them for 23 and four of them for 24. So the projects were to be funded in 23 were funded. The projects in 24, according to the approval letter from DOT, said that those projects would be included in the contract amount for the upcoming year. And our NDOT rep confirmed the other day when that those amounts were not included. So hence the need for this amendment. Part of this is, you know, we've been talking about how there's changes coming from DOT and how we carry over projects, and what they've determined from Federal Highway Administration, because of some of the inaction of some of the other MPOs around the state, is they've been carrying over funds and carrying over funds for a number of years. And the knee-jerk reaction to that is they're not going to carry over funds anymore. They're going to be a one-year contract like we had today. What's going to happen at the end of the year is they're going to de-obligate those funds. And that's a really harsh word. I liken it to almost a punishment. And then they promised this first year, since this was only determined in September, so we've had 3 months to deal with this, that come January, they would re-obligate the funds to keep us whole. So we're hoping they're going to keep their word on that, because we don't have anything in writing. They've not provided us any kind of details in writing for any of this. They've also not provided us a written formula for how they determine our funding amounts every year. Now, this is crucial because it's changed, because there's now a fourth MPO in Minot that actually came online in November. So they're brand new and they're included in that. Yet we still haven't received a detailed breakdown of how their formula calculations are. So because there's nothing in place that they've determined it working with DOT on how to re-obligate these funds, this carryover amendment is the only way that we see to put that in front of them, to have them act on that and to keep us whole and projects that are already underway or that are about to become underway, such as there's an RFP on this agenda for the Horace Downtown Core Neighborhood Study. There's also the Metro Railroad Need Study that was, you know, we just heard back from the railroad last month. You know, I can't keep the railroad to a schedule. So there's projects that we have that haven't started for various reasons. And they North Dakota DOT seem to be taking a hard stance on this. This will at least make an official attempt for us requesting to carry these funds over in addition to what we have in our contracted amount. So it's a little bit unusual for this large of amount to be included, but we feel like it's the only option that we have now, since there's nothing that's been provided to us. And I know that's real complicated and probably more than y'all wanted to hear, but in essence, what we've got is an end of year amendment, which includes a carryover amount of $812,273.62. And we also have the amendment for staff hours, have changed a little bit from what was originally budgeted and accounted for at the end of 2022 when the work program was done. So I know that's a mouthful and it's real complicated, and I'll be glad to answer any questions y'all may have.
Any questions?
And Michael's online. Michael, if I left anything out or misspoke on something, I'm hoping you'll correct me on that, because I know we've worked close on this, because Michael has that history with the work program and everything going back to 2022 when it was first adopted. So, Michael, did I cover everything?
I believe you covered it. Yeah, very judiciously.
Okay, thanks.
Any questions? If not, I'm looking for a motion to approve the amendment.
Make a motion.
I'm going to approve.
One second.
Okay. Motion and second. Any other questions or comments? If not, roll call vote, please.
Gunkelman?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Kolpak?
Aye.
McDougal?
Aye.
Nash.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Pepcorn.
Aye.
Preston.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Strand.
Yes.
Trudeau.
Yes.
And White.
Yes.
Did I miss anybody?
And that amendment does pass. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Brings us to 3C, the Horace Core Neighborhoods Plan RFP. Mrs. Michael, hello. Excuse me. Michael?
Sorry, I'm searching for the unmute button there. As Ben mentioned before, we have included in our work program a study that was amended into our work program last year to assist the city of Horace with some planning within their downtown area and their adjacent neighborhoods. This planning, you know, as you all probably know, Horace has been growing very rapidly. There's been a lot of expansion. And a lot of that new expansion has been to modern standards. So including sidewalks and paths and all of the like. However, the older parts of the core neighborhoods and the downtown are more difficult to implement this infrastructure into the streetscape. And so we're looking at alternatives to retrofit some of this bicycle pedestrian infrastructure into their core neighborhoods and hook it with some of the newer path facilities that are going in, as well as to gain access to their downtown area. And along with that, they would like their downtown area to be more pedestrian friendly, to urbanize that street section a little bit more, create a formal sidewalk and access along from the neighborhoods to those businesses that are down there as redevelopment continues to occur in Horace. So we've set a budget for this. And one of the things, there's an interesting piece, this may be getting into the weeds a little bit. We have worked with NDDOT on a portion of the IIJA transportation bill that does not require local match for items that go to a complete streets purpose. It's the complete street, we call it the complete street set aside. And that is 2.5% of our CPG, statewide CPG allowance. And so we've allocated $81,473 of CPG complete street set aside money that does not require a local match for this project, along with $92,000 of CPG that does require a local match, and the local match requirement for that is $23,000. And with that, I'll keep this pretty brief, and I'll just open it up for any questions if anybody has anything they would like to ask me.
Any questions for Michael?
I have a question, Chuck.
Yep, go ahead.
So my question is, are we working, so to me, the MetroCog is very important with Horace and West Fargo, and Fargo with their planning and engineering about the corridors, you know, that connect with West Fargo and Horace to make sure that down the road that they're all fitting together. Are we actively doing that? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, we are actively doing that. There are things that are put forward in our bicycle and pedestrian plan, Dan, in the room, could elaborate more on that. But one of the major components of that is a lot of the city of Horace, I'm sorry, you know, that connectivity does not exist. And so we are looking to see how we could hook some of those facilities up with the other neighborhoods, and there's some park facilities that are within those neighborhoods. And so they're right now along County 17, MetroCog and the federal government have made some investment using federal dollars in some of the trail facilities that run north and south around County Road 17 that ultimately hook into will hook someday into the Cheyenne corridor, will hook into Deer Creek neighborhood, will hook in the pond facility or the regional pond facility over east of Deer Creek development, south of 52nd, between 64th and 52nd. And so we are looking at a larger frame in this study of how to hook all of those facilities and create one kind of nice large facility that that goes in new areas and old areas to downtown, to goods and services. And so that'll be component of this planning study as well, forwarding those principles.
So just one follow-up, and also the county too, because I guess my concern is 176 to have those corridors to make sure that those are preserved, even though the development might not happen for a long time. But I think Horace is a smaller town, and they don't have the horsepower of engineering and planning that a bigger town. And that's, I've just heard that they're getting a lot of pressure. And I think MetroCog can serve a big role in helping them just because of the staff size of a smaller town. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, I really appreciate your comment, Commissioner Pepcorn. The county has been a great partner to work with in the reservation of right-of-way for these type of facilities as the roadways urbanize. You can see that along 76th corridor, where the new West Fargo School District High School and Middle School is. There are path facilities along that section and within that section. And then as you extend, there is right of way that is in reserve. The county, that's the new County Road 6 from when 52nd came off. And the county has done a great job in the management of that corridor and having right-of-way that's reserved and access managing that corridor as well. So as the county is very interested in how the urbanization is going to take place down there and what the infrastructure needs are going to take place and kind of when things will turn over and how things get implemented. So they've been a very good partner.
Great. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
I see Commissioner Strand has his hand up.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Michael, I'm not certain this fits the scope of the neighborhood plan that will unfold or the downtown studies, but something I would put on everybody's radar as they're doing this is the two physical structures, the Senex Harvest States grain elevators right in the heart of their downtown, that the ownership has transitioned from the Diversion Authority to the City of Horace, to my knowledge, or is happening. And so nobody, to my knowledge, knows what that will be down the road, but it could be something pleasantly surprising or not. I don't know, but just have that on people's radar that those two grain elevators in the middle of their downtown are going to be a focal point, I'm guessing, of some development in the near future.
Yeah, thank you for that comment, Commissioner Strand. One of the things that was integrated into the plan that the city was going to pay for separately was some charrettes of how that site could redevelop. That is not an eligible task under transportation plans. And so we thought it best to leave that segment out of our study, and the city would do it independently, just because it's a lot cleaner, just because of the eligibility of the funds that we utilize for transportation planning. But they will be looking at that in tandem with us going forward in the study, and we will be doing some visioning on whether that site gets redeveloped. Well, I shouldn't say redeveloped, because it's going to be redeveloped. Whether it is something different than what is there, or if the shell of the Senex Harvest, the CHS facility stays, and then how we could have bicycle and pedestrian facilities that would access that site. So that's the two things that they're kind of looking at now, is whether that site will be raised and then something built besides that, or whether they can actually redevelop that facility into something else. So they don't have the answer to that question yet.
Anyone else have any questions?
I just had a question quick. This is Jeff Trudeau from the City of Horace. And I was just wondering if any of the Cass County Commissioners could actually reach out to our mayor and update us on what was just told to the group here, just to make sure that we are talking about current and relevant information.
Our one Cass County seat is not in today, so I can definitely send you his email address if you'd like.
That would be great. I appreciate it.
Any other questions? Matt, I'm looking for a motion. The RFP.
I'll make that motion to the Horace Core Neighborhood Plan.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any last comments or concerns? Not roll call vote, please.
Gunkelman?
Aye.
Robinson?
Aye.
Kolpak?
Aye.
McDougal?
Aye.
Nash?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Pepcorn?
Aye.
Preston?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Strand?
Yes.
Trudeau?
Yes.
White?
Yes.
Did I miss anybody?
That motion does pass. Brings us to...
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Agenda item 3D, the 2023 Metro Profile. This is either Sharon or Chelsea.
Both.
So today we'll be presenting the findings of the 2023 Metropolitan Profile. Chelsea is not in today, so I'll be taking over her slides. So that's it on that part. So today we are presenting the 2023 Metropolitan Profile. There is one copy of the profile on the table for hard copy. We're not going to do the whole presentation. We're just going to give you the highlights. And so within the 2023 Metropolitan Profile, it is broken down into five chapters, each of which focuses on trends that affect development patterns and the transportation network of the MPA. We have the community profile, roadways, freight, bike and pedestrian, and transit. So first off, the community profile, we tend to stay with the five-year census data and from 2021 trends to 2022, which the Metro profile is based off of 2022 conditions. The Metro has grown and most of that growth has occurred within Fargo, Forest, and Dilworth at a 2.59% increase. For demographics, the Metro has aged a bit, has diversified a bit, however, at a much slower trend than national averages. Employment, the Fargo-Moorhead metropolitan area has the second lowest unemployment rate in the nation, only Sioux Falls is kind of our Bismarck is ahead of us. We are having high percent in labor force. Our median household income has increased. However, the US has surpassed us compared to 2021 data. Poverty has increased and work from home has decreased. And that is also a current trend within the United States. Roadways, our VMT, or vehicles miles traveled, have continued to decrease. We have not reached our pre-pandemic levels. Our auto travel time reliability has stayed the same. Our VMT per capita has decreased and our commute has stayed around a constant value. These are our transportation improvement program projects in 2022. We had 43. This on the side are the cost breakdowns, the total cost, federal funding, state funding, local funding, and the top 2022 federally funded TIP projects are on the top, mainly revolving around interstate maintenance on I-94, safety improvements on I-94, and reconstruction of 32nd and 52nd Avenue South. And the QR code takes you to the TIP webpage. Safety and pavement condition targets. So what we changed from last year to this year is that instead of doing the safety targets for both states, we decided to do the actual conditions. With that, on the North Dakota side and Minnesota side, numbers have increased and decreased. Number of fatalities, 8, 58 for serious injuries, 8 for non-motorized. more on the non-motorized later. Payment conditions have stayed relatively constant, more detailed within the document. Freight air cargo has decreased from 2021, and I'm going too quickly. I'll elaborate more. Travel reliability for trucks have gone up a bit, but we're still within our targets. And then rail and air has all increased. We've actually had the second busiest passenger year on record, almost surpassing 2019, which was the year of record. Our entire builder on-time performance decreased from 2021. And then we have some information about our train crossings in downtown Fargo as well. Bike and pedestrian. When comparing to 2021 data, our trends actually increased slightly for non-motorized crashes. However, when looking at 2021 data, there was an error from DOT. With that error, there was still, it was corrected and there's still an increase from 2021. Despite that, there were zero fatal non-motorized crashes in 2022 within the MPA, and the serious injuries can be seen on the left side of the screen in their locations. Bike and pedestrian projects, these are the partially and completed projects within the metro and breakdown of bikeway topologies within the metro. These will be updated shortly for 2023. And then bicycle counts. The majority of the counts happen within Broadway. And so with that, we decided to focus on Broadway within Fargo. And then Chelsea did an excellent job breaking down and highlighting trends within the transit section of the Metro profile. The ridership increased through all facets except for the Morehead-Dilworth portion of MPA. Ridership for NDSU, MSUM, Concordia, and other schools have increased as well, except for NBSCS. And then these are the fleet conditions based off of Fargo fixed route fleet and the Morehead fixed route fleets and mileage and replacements. This continues for the paratransit. And then, yeah, and so with that, the suggested action is to approve the document, and this document will be on our web page. And yeah, if there's any questions or anything, this is a voting document, so next year we're going to improve more upon it. So if there's any questions, you could talk to me afterwards. Yeah,
like Council Member White has a question.
Yeah,
just a quick question going back to the MAP bus ridership. So it was nice to see that it's rebounding since the pandemic, except in Morehead. So is there any discussion of why that's the case, or do we have a sense of why it's still, we're down, what, another 5.5%?
I personally do not know why that is or what behavior or action is causing that.
I think if I can jump in, Chelsea may not sure, but if I'm not mistaken, when we met with the MAP bus folks, the numbers were pretty steady and stable. So that's why there wasn't a lot of change in there like there was in some of the other areas.
That's correct, Ben.
Okay. That's what I thought it was when we had met with the MAP bus folks, is the numbers were already pretty stable and pretty constant. So not a lot of fluctuation and change like you have with colleges, like with student, you know, with the students when they arrive and when they leave. So,
and they're having troubles getting bus drivers and things like that. So they're reducing the times and all that. So that plays into a big factor.
Yeah. Those of you that are on the MAP coordinating board, y'all hear it every time. It's recruitment and retention of drivers is a big factor in how many routes, how many routes can be serviced, how often they can be serviced. That is a constant headache for the MAP bus folks, and they're working tirelessly trying to figure out how to address that. And they've, well, y'all are on the coordinating board here, that, but that's a big problem. And it's not just here in Fargo-Moorhead, it's across the country. It's every transit agency in the nation.
Good. I thought this was, fascinating data in here. A lot of cool stuff. I have some follow-ups on pedestrian data that I'm going to write to you about, but I thought the jaw-dropping numbers in here were, we're under 2% unemployment, which is amazing. I mean, everyone working wants to work, basically has a job, but to see poverty go up by almost 19% and 11% of the people in poverty, I mean, that's alarming. I don't know what we do about that, but obviously that means, we have jobs. Are they just not paying enough? Our median income's not going up. And so it's kind of alarming, I think, to go up that much.
Has anybody taken a look at that lately? I know it's when I first started on council, they took a good look at that, but I think it's been kind of quiet for the last 5-6 years. So that might be a good study.
Councilmember White?
Just going back to the MAP bus issue, I guess I just would wonder if we see that we've got over a 6% increase on the North Dakota side and a 5% decrease on the Minnesota side. And that just concerns me that, just hoping we're looking into that. And I can contact the, more folks in MAP bus directly, but to see that big of a difference between one side of the river versus the other, means maybe we need to look at what we're, what we need to work on in Moorhead and Dilworth to make it more accessible.
Yeah, I can kind of answer some of those questions too. There's not one silver bullet that explains the decrease there. There's a couple of trends I will say. In 2022, there was some detours that were in place so that there was a lot of construction. If you remember, like Center was closed and so that dramatically impacted some of the core services that in the core corridors that MapBus uses. Also, it's been a trend, and it kind of started during COVID, that eligible populations that can use other services like paratransit or senior ride, and you can see that from the numbers here, have taken advantage of the door-to-door service rather than riding fixed route. And so fixed route has taken a hit where those, you can see the increases. So generally in the transit world, we like to see an inverse relationship between paratransit ridership and fixed route ridership, just because paratransit ridership is extremely costly to provide. And so we've seen that people that were using the fixed route service during COVID, they switched to paratransit and they're likely probably not coming back. And so that could be a definite swing of why people in Moorhead, like I said, there's no one silver bullet that I can directly point to, but those are just some of the trends that we've been seeing in the transit world. And of course, I think everybody knows of our, workforce issues with transit in the last couple of years and trying to find drivers and that's ongoing. So that's something that's affected us in the last couple of years and will be affecting us into the future.
Chelsea, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I wanted to add to this is the change from 21 to 22 and looking at ridership. Currently in 23, Moorhead, everyone is rebounding really well from COVID. It's just taking a little bit longer.
Any other questions or discussion? If not, I'm looking for a motion to approve this profile, the document.
I'll make that motion.
White seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any other comments? If not, roll call vote, please.
Dunkelman?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Opak?
Aye.
Dugo?
Aye.
Nash?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Pepcorn?
Aye.
Preston?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Snyder?
Aye.
Strand? Trudeau?
Yes.
White?
Yes.
And John Strand?
Thank you very much. That does pass. Brings us to 3E, the 25th Street Corridor Study Final Report. And this is Michael and Scott. Scott's up there.
Sure, I'll just introduce Scott. MetroCog has, since January, February of 2022, has been studying the 25th Street Corridor from 32nd Avenue South to 64th Avenue South. We brought on board Scott Midda with KLJ and their and his team to look at this corridor and look at some alternatives. And with that, we'll be promised to be brief. I know that we're approaching 5 o'clock here. And so I'll just hand it over to him.
Thank you, Michael. As Michael said, I'm Scott Midda with KLJ. I see on the agenda, I have 10 minutes, so we'll get so kind of give you a recap of the 25th Street Corridor study. So what we're going to look at is the study location, the overview. We had two rounds of public feedback or public input. One was at the initial part of the study and then one wrapped up at the end. Some of the future conditions, the existing conditions, the alternatives we looked at, and then again at the end, which ones we what we took to the public. I fixed our advancing. So what we looked at is the study goes from 64th Avenue South all the way up to 32nd Avenue South on 25th Street. It also includes the intersection of 27th Avenue or 27th Street and 52nd Avenue. I'm not going to talk about each one of these individually, but more we're going to split it to kind of 52nd Avenue for the proposed alternatives that we looked at. With this, for some of the existing conditions I'd like to highlight is the one I want to talk about is the existing crash analysis. There was 5 intersections on this corridor that exceeded the critical crash rate. That was 32nd, the intersection of 27th Street and 52nd, 52nd Avenue, 58th Avenue, and 64th Avenue. So the interesting part about that is from 52nd Avenue South, all of those crashes, at least half of them were related to inexperienced drivers. So you look at that, you have Shanley High School, you have Davies High School. And so that's contributing to a lot of crashes there. You also have the roundabouts at both 64th. When we went to the public the first time, we read the initial part of the corridor study, we were looking for input on anything with the corridor. What's good, what's bad, what do people see in the future? And we got a kind of a wide range of feedback. We also had people rank their priority for that corridor. What we came out was kind of big 3 trends was traffic safety, no center turn. That was probably the biggest one. That also went with traffic congestion, no center turn, and as well as business access. People didn't like the business access, which I kind of see this corridor does have some of the best access control probably in town, very limited. And then bike and pedestrian. One of the things we heard was it is very difficult for pedestrians to cross this corridor. And then also we heard a lot of complaints about the roundabouts at 58 and 64th. I should also say with the traffic safety, another item we heard was traffic speeding. You know, when you look at the corridor from 52nd Avenue all the way up to Rose Creek Drive, that's near a mile. That's a 4-lane road with very minimal access points and no signals through that stretch. And so that was another item we heard. So we dove into the analysis. We looked at traffic operations and projection, future projected traffic. We looked at the traffic existing. We took counts. We took train movement counts. And then we projected all that to a 2045. We looked at 2 different scenarios. We looked at south of 52nd, as is today, in 2045. And the other scenario was with an additional interstate access point at either 64th Avenue and or 76th. And what we found is north of 52nd was a very, very flat growth. We looked at not only old studies and their projected growth rates, but what we've seen over time. And that was about 0.25% growth is all that was. South of 52nd, if you don't have additional interstate access, the traffic on that road increases significantly. When you add interstate access, it actually stays pretty flat. So that was kind of an interesting tidbit. So with this, like I said, we separated out into the mile segments. And I'll go through the 64th and, you know, north and south 52nd, but we looked at a lot of different typical sections. So I guess we can just dive into that. South of 52nd, we looked at, you know, that's kind of a hybrid typical section down there. There's, as you go southbound, there's two lanes southbound, one lane northbound until you hit about 58th. And then it turns into a three lane with bike lanes. We looked at a three lane section there. We looked at a five lane section. We looked at different intersection control, because when you look at that area, that southwest quadrant of the intersection, there's a lot of residential, and they're all trying to get to interstate. We did an origin destination, and that's everyone wants to go up 25th or 27th and take a left on 52nd to get to 29. With the limited right of way and the traffic benefit that we saw, it was decided not to carry any typical section changes forward. So keep the roadway section as is today. And with hoping that any improvements at 27th Street and 52nd will relieve some of that that congestion on 25th Street, South 52nd, and also any future interstate access on 64th or 76th will help relieve that as well. What we did look at is, again, we heard a lot of, it's hard to cross the corridor. These roundabouts at 58th and 64th specifically, that was tough. So what we looked at is how can we keep as much of the existing infrastructure, but still, you know, aid in the pedestrian crossing. And so what we looked at is push button actuated LED outline signs. So when a pedestrian comes up, they can hit that button and it'll actually start flashing. So they're not always on, but only when pedestrians come across. Another thing we looked at is on this section of the roadway, there's a shared use path on the west side, or I'm sorry, on the east side, and it's hit and miss on the west side. So we looked at, there's a frontage road down there, if anyone's familiar with that part of town. Instead of taking all the trees out in the boulevard on the west side, let's just add a little sidewalk connection to that frontage road. It's very low volume, it's about a half mile long. It's just residential houses on there. Put pedestrians on that, strive it as a shared road, and kind of keep the trees and everything how they are today. So those are the recommendations, the alternative we looked at south of 57. North of 52nd, we looked at four different roadway typical sections. The first two is the three lane and the five lane. So again, when we talked to the public, one of the big things was no center turn. With this, there's 100 feet of right of way on 25th Street. It's not a lot, so it's pretty tight. If we go to a three lane section, we can keep all the existing boulevard trees and we can keep the pedestrian infrastructure the same. Currently, north of 52nd, there's a shared use path on the west side. And for the most part, it's a sidewalk on the east. There is a couple spots with shared use path. If we go to a five lane section, what we found is talking with Public Works and looking at the trees out there is the existing trees, the drip line of those trees is about at the existing curb. And so if we widen the road, talking with Public Works, the snowplows, mat bus, those trees will be impacted by those vehicles. And so we'd have to get rid of the boulevard trees, which they've been there since the early 90s, late 80s. And so they're mature trees. So that's one of the things we had to look at. But with that, since we're removing those trees, we're able to get a shared use path on the east side of the road. So we'd have wider pedestrian facilities on both the east and west side. The other thing we looked at is, excuse me, what can we do to keep the existing infrastructure? The roadway functions fairly well right now. I mean, there's some intersections with four levels of service, but it's mostly a side street delay. But how can we get that center left turn? So we looked at a couple 2+1 options. And so that would be two lanes in one direction, center turn, and a single lane in the opposite direction. This area of, you know, this is north of 52nd. This area of 25th Street is fully developed. And so when we looked at the traffic numbers, the northbound versus southbound volumes are very, very, very similar. It's impressive between the AM peak and the PM peak. And so when we looked at this, it's a coin flip on what's more beneficial, two lanes northbound or two lanes southbound. The only place we really saw any slight differential is from 40th Avenue to 32nd. There's a slight benefit to have two lanes northbound and one lane southbound. So one of the options we looked at is with a three lane section, it's just with a three lane only. We looked at replacing the existing signal at Rose Creek Drive, which is the southern access to Centennial Elementary, with a roundabout. The level of service or the traffic operations between a roundabout and the existing signal are very similar. There's a very slight benefit with the roundabout, but the roundabout will help lower speeds through that area. If you drive that, unless there's a school, 9 times out of 10, you're gonna hit a green light on 25th Street. So that roundabout will have a continuous effect to slow traffic. The last area we looked at was that 27th Street intersection. And we looked at two different configurations. I don't know, for those of you that aren't, there's a Sonic now down in that southwest corner. So traffic is increasing even more there. We looked at adding a signal. We are fairly close to the 25th Street intersection with 52nd. So there's a signal there. A signal will function. It'll work. We also looked at adding a restricted crossing U-turn. And that's the same configuration that's on 52nd Avenue west of Interstate. I guess even west of 45th Street. What we found is the both function fine. There is actually less delay with this R-cut configuration. But for travelers traveling north and west, it does take a little more travel time. You know, the east-west traffic will never stop with this, but you know, it's gonna improve regardless. There's just slight more travel time for the northwest travelers. All right, so to kind of wrap all this up, we looked at how can we look at these comparatively. So we looked at four different metrics to score these. It was traffic operations, environmental impacts, and again, environmental impacts just go to basically trees. This is a 100% built out corridor. There's not a lot of issues with noise, wetlands, cultural items, things like that. So that was based on if we were removing trees and how many. The other thing we looked at is pedestrian mobility, and that's if we added any more additional pedestrian infrastructure. Like I said, that three lane, for the most part, we left it alone. So that would score a little lower on the pedestrian. And then the last one is cost. You know, every alternative, even with the 2+1 that kept the same footprint of the road, we assumed all of them were reconstructions. So naturally, the more pavement, the more expensive they get. So the three lane is the least expensive option. The five lane is the more expensive. I will note, you can see from 52nd to 40th, those, I guess it doesn't show here, but if you look at the actual numbers, those costs are a little higher just because we do include replacing the bridge over Rose Cooley with those costs. So we put all this together and we went back to the public another time to show them, you know, get their feedback on the alternatives we presented or we developed. And then we kind of got a mixed reaction. So we had an open house where we had people come in, we had boards set up, they could ask us questions, and then we had all the same information online with about a 5-minute video explaining our process. What we found was about half the people that participated wanted the five lane and the other half wanted no changes. So it comes down to it, you know, the one thing, and it doesn't reflect here, but on our comment response, you can just type in a comment. And there was some conversation about special assessments, how the roadway functions, so why spend the money? So you have to take that into account when you look at this information as well. And with that, I'm open to answer any questions you guys might have.
Questions? So you made the comment that if it's connected to the interstate, that will change. So do you anticipate down the road, obviously we know that part of town is gonna grow, but if we have a connection to the interstate, do you still need to have more capacity? I guess that's my
question. The capacity isn't an issue. It's more of the traffic, the side street delay is where we found down the road is where we run into issues, and then the 52nd Avenue issue. If we add access to interstate, it relieves 52nd Avenue. That intersection is really what we're looking at.
But do you get what I'm asking? So then do you necessarily need to think of, well, down the road, we need five lanes when maybe that won't necessarily be the case? I guess that's my question to you.
Are you talking north 52nd?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we wouldn't necessarily need five lanes. The biggest thing we're looking at is how can we get that center turn up? Another thing I guess I could point out is during this study, it was last summer, 2 summers ago, there was a pretty bad accident with, I believe it was a school bus traveling north on 25th Street. Someone was trying to take a left and it was a pretty bad rear end. And so that's what we're looking at is, we didn't look at that five lane strictly for capacity. If you look at, I don't have the information right in front of me, but between the three and the five lane, there's not a lot of difference in travel time and level of service. I think it's a lot of driver perception of you're taking a four-lane facility and turn it into a three-lane with only one lane in each direction. Does that answer your question?
Yep, thanks.
So the 76th, refresh my memory, when is that tentatively on the DOT to take place? Because the 64th jumped ahead or whatever happened out of the 64th.
There's no access to interstate there, though. You can just cross it.
Oh, there's nothing on the Horace side.
There's nothing on either side to get onto interstate there at 64th. You can just cross interstate.
So currently 64th is strictly...
No, I mean 76th. Pardon me, if I said 64th, okay. I meant 76th. Is there... What's happening on the... right now, the 64th connects kind of straight into Horace. I mean, whatever, goes straight across.
Yep.
What was the long-range expectation on 76th? I thought it was actually on, wasn't it on the DOT? I thought at one time, or what, or isn't it?
It was, but it got removed. But I guess my thought is you have to have all those corridors reserved, but you don't necessarily need to have, this is going to be all down the road.
Oh yeah, no. I get that. And I think this, the west side, you know, with the diversion taking place and everything else, we know that 76th and south in that corridor over there will grow. I do know that the 64th makes it very convenient for people to go over, what is it, the 45th, and then head north. That had to have relieved some traffic, at least for the people going, say, to that quadrant of for work or whatever. But I don't remember. 64th kind of got put in. I thought it had just had a schedule. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, Mr.
There's a story to it, but I.
There's a story.
Okay.
Can I tell a real quick abbreviation?
Yeah, absolutely.
The governor likes the downtown development and didn't want us to grow to the south, so. The governor is in charge of the DOT, and so the DOT said, we're not going to fund that. We were going to put an interchange. So, anyways, and that might be an editorial comment a little bit too, so I apologize. Anyway, that's what happened. But this is part of MetroCog's job, is we have to prepare for these. And that's why I got into that question about three lanes versus five lanes. If we don't need five down the road, then that doesn't make sense to me, I guess. But that's why you're the professional.
Yeah, correct. It's not a capacity issue. It's
right.
It's not. Yes.
Where does this study go from here?
So this is the concluding of the study. It will get posted on MetroCog's website. When this study was first, when we first started it, 25th Street was the existing roadway was starting to deteriorate pretty rapidly, especially from 12th Cooley to the north. That has since been overlaid, so the ride quality is back. In talking with the city engineering department, it would be about a 8 to 10 year possibly in the future implementation. But Jeremy would know more about that than
Mr. Schneider.
I'll just say I appreciate that you had the larger shared path where the on the side of the road where the commercial properties are. I know one of my pet peeves was the same section between 32nd and 40th on 45th Street. You have the beautiful shared use path on one side and then all the businesses on the other side. And if you look at the sidewalk on that, on the commercial side, it's the skinny little sidewalk, mm-hmm. and not once does it connect into the businesses. And so you have this like sidewalk to nowhere. And so just appreciate the consciousness that went into that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Not, I am looking for a motion to approve this final report.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Gunkelman.
Aye.
Hendrickson.
Aye.
Heck. Aye.
McDougal.
Aye.
Nash.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Pepcorn.
Aye.
Preston.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Schneider.
Aye.
Strand. Trudeau.
Yes.
And White.
Yes.
Did I miss anybody?
Final report has passed. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may for a second.
Sure. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just want to thank Scott and his team at KLJ for their great work on this study. They were a pleasure to work with and very flexible and innovative in their approach to this study. And I think we got some good results. And so I just wanted to applaud them while he's in the room there.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you very much. They're pushing it. It's 12:30 already. Brings us to 3F, employee salary adjustments, and I believe that's Ben.
That is me. Every year we do a survey of our local jurisdictions to determine if they are going to increase do a salary adjustment for their staff. This year, as you can see on the memo, everyone was at 3% with the exception of two of our cities. So 3% was the average, and we use 3% for budgeting purposes for upcoming years. So part of this is we prepared a chart, there we go. It's on the slide there. Using 3% as the base, we figure upwards and downwards what those increments, those half percent increments are, what their impacts are on our budget. And you can see there, it's about $4,823 at every half percent increase or decrease. So with that, we used the 3%, and we presented this to the executive committee at their December 4th meeting, and they recommended the 3% increase for MetroCog staff for beginning in January. And one item to note that we generally follow the city of Fargo's steps and grades, and we also look at, again, that 3% is what we use for our budgeting going forward. That seems to be a number that works well for us historically, and it seems like it would for the upcoming year. So with that, want to recommend approval of a 3% salary adjustment for staff in 2024. I'd be glad to answer any questions y'all may have.
Any questions? Anybody online? If not, I'm looking for a motion to approve the salary adjustment.
This is Dave. I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any other questions? If not, roll call vote.
Dunkelman?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Yes.
Kopack?
Yes.
McDougal?
Aye.
Nash?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Pepcorn?
Aye.
Preston?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Yes.
Schneider?
Aye.
Strand? Trudeau?
Yes.
And White?
Yes.
Okay, so that salary adjustment does pass, which brings us to 3F, which is informational only, the preview of received projects, and I believe that's all.
Thank you, Chair. What you're talking about is a preview of the received projects with the recent solicitation. What I'd like to highlight on this page is we implemented a new thing with this solicitation that we haven't done in the past, which is really cool, and we've gotten really good feedback from the public on it, is actually bringing the projects we received to the public and giving them an opportunity to prioritize the projects. And then we're bringing that information to you guys in January and also to the TTC so you guys can factor in that component into your decision-making. And that's a link to the QR code if you guys haven't heard about it yet. We've so far received around 100 responses. When I was practicing this earlier today, I said 100,000 and I was like, whoa, it's a little more than what we've actually gotten. So that is that. And then we'll be following a similar technical evaluation process to what we did in May with the TTC, and then bringing that to you guys At the January 18th meeting, the plan is to have some sort of a scoring so that it's a little easier for you guys to look at and see which one is better by the TTC. So to quickly go through our different funding buckets and what you guys will be looking at, we will not be reviewing any TA, which stands for Transportation Alternatives in Minnesota. The funding bucket is really small. And so in discussion with Moorhead, MnDOT, and Dilworth, the plan is to solicit for that every other year so that it can build, and then you solicit for 2 years of funding as opposed to one. But we will be soliciting for CRP in 2025, 2026, and 2027, and that's roughly $120,000 per year. And as you can see, we received two applications. Then the next bucket is STBG, which stands for Surface Transportation Block Grant. That's the large roadway type projects. And that's just for 2028 in Minnesota. And that's about just under a million or just over $1 million. And we received one application. Let's move into North Dakota. We are soliciting for the Transportation Alternatives, and that's 2026 and 2027. Roughly $850,000. And as you can see, we have a plethora of projects to choose from. And we'll go through this in more detail in January. Just wanted to get this in front of you guys today. And then for carbon reduction program, CRP, you're doing 2026 and 2027. And that's roughly $1.2 million in that bucket. And pretty much all of these projects are also being solicited as transportation alternatives, TA. Because a shared use path can be viewed as, hey, look, now someone won't be driving and they'll be biking or walking instead. So there's going to be a reduction in carbon emissions. So that's cool about this source. And then the final source is Surface Transportation Block Grant funding. We are soliciting for 2028, and that's $10.7 million in funding. However, it is possible that the currently programmed projects in 2027 could shift years. Or BD programs. Think the Broadway Bridge, in that decision has not been made by the city of Fargo, and that would have impacts on the programming of projects here. If that happens, the 2027 funding would need to be reprogrammed. So we'd have to find alternative projects for that funding. And the total amount in that bucket is $10.5 million. So that might be on the table as well. January. Does anyone have any questions about any of the projects or funding sources? Yes.
I know we're kind of in moving, but I know I commented on this originally, so I feel like I should follow up, but I am a little disappointed that all the entities submitted projects within their entity and nobody focused on the river crossing. I know we keep talking about more pedestrian crossings over the Red River, and I think it would be really nice if Fargo and Moorhead worked together on using this type of funding for metro priorities, because a lot of these could be funded individually by each city too. So while it's an extra pot of money, it's a special pot of money that should fund special type projects like that. And I thought that's, you know, would have been a priority with this type of new funding. So hopefully they can do that next year.
Thank you for your comment.
Any other comments? It's the last meeting of the year, so it's going to go.
I know.
So don't worry about that.
Be uninvited. No, it's not.
Any other comments? Anybody online?
Nope.
Okay, so that was informational. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brings us to 3H summary of benefits presentation. I believe that's Ben.
Yeah, sweet. y'all have seen part of this or some of this in the past. You want me to?
Oh, sure.
And I'll be real brief on this. Every year, the executive director is required to provide a summary of benefits to the policy board that are available to the staff members. So this year, I've tried to do this right. There we go. I'll start here with career development and training, and that's a big component of what we do. I'm a real big supporter of that. We have a lot of free training is available online on, you know, for transportation issues. We also have conferences and seminars that we attend regularly that are usually at a pretty good cost or that are done locally here. But we do a little bit of travel as well. But the main tie is it has to be transportation related or something that we do within our purview of work. Professional dues and certifications, our professional dues are paid. Those of us that have professional certifications, whether it's AICP or a professional engineer, we have one professional engineer, Paul, on staff. So those professional dues are paid. I encourage everyone, if they don't have any certifications, to try to seek those out. Again, those that are related to transportation, and we'll maintain those. And I, whenever I see any trainings that are available, either from Federal Highway or the DOTs or some of the advocacy organizations, I'm real quick to pass those along because they fill up really quick, and they're usually very timely topics. A compensatory time, we have different rates of accruals for exempt and non-exempt employees, and we keep up with those through our regular timekeeping system. We have vacation accrues. It is based on years of service, and it's very generous accrual of vacation leave. There's a maximum of 200 hours that can be carried over at the end of the year. So we watch that closely, and generally this time of the year is when a lot of folks like to use that vacation time, so that works out pretty well. We also have sick leave accrual of one day per month, and there's a maximum accumulation of 120 working days at year end. So we have sick leave, which is available for use, a lot of folks use it for doctor appointments or if they have sick kids or what have you. So that's good to have as well. Our holiday leave, we have 10 holidays. Yeah, 10 paid holidays, including a half day for Christmas Eve. There had been some discussion earlier this year about maybe changing one of our floating holidays to the day after Thanksgiving, but talking with staff, we wanted to keep it the way it is. So part of your meeting schedule that was approved on the consent agenda has these holidays listed, and there weren't any conflicts this year with holidays in any of our meetings. So always good. We also have other leave. We have FMLA, we have jury duty, military leave, as well as funeral leave. And those are all accounted for through our timekeeping system. Insurance, we have a very good health insurance, health, dental, and vision through Blue Cross Blue Shield. We also have a health savings account. MetroCog pays half of that amount into the individual's health savings account, and the staff members have the option of either doing it as a lump sum or over a period of time to match that amount. And there's slightly different rates for what employees pay out of pocket for these services. But Blue Cross Blue Shield has done a very good job of providing this these insurance benefits to us. And we chose them again this year, and we'll be using them for 24. We also have a flex spending account, which is an optional program. It's mainly used for dependent care, whether that's child care or elder dependent care as well, and healthcare costs. And currently no one is taking advantage of that, but we do have it available if it would be. We have our retirement. We have a simple IRA plan through Bell Bank. So we have a local rep who works with that, keeps us up to date. We have MetroCog matches up to 3% of employees' contributions, and several employees contribute more than the 3%. So that's always good to see as well. We also have workers' comp insurance, group travel insurance, we have state unemployment insurance. Life, accidental death and dismemberment, and long-term disability are done through a package with Mutual of Omaha. And I think that's been for 2 years now. That's now 2 years now. So that's been really good. Mutual of Omaha is a solid company. We also have short-term disability that's available for the staff members, and about half participate in that as well. And I made the note about Mutual of Omaha. Employee assistance program is, we have counseling services that are available through Village EAP here in town. And I strongly encourage folks to use that. It's, and I'm not a psychiatrist, but a lot of times just talking to folks about issues you may have is a world of help. And if not, it would get someone pointed in the right direction if they needed to seek more specific help. So I'm always encouraging that. We have it, it's a benefit, and I encourage folks to take advantage of that. And our compensation as of December 21st, I've broken that down for each staff member. I put everyone's names there and what their grades and steps are. So I've got everyone listed. Actually, we've got everyone listed here, but our intern, Aiden. So we left you out, Aiden. But these are all our full-time staff members that we have here. And we are currently up to staff. Chelsea's our newest hire, began in October. So we are fully staffed. And with that, I believe that is it. We have additional business. And I have a couple of items in
sure.
Minutes. I will run through them real quick. Okay. I wanted to let y'all know we've talked about our indirect cost rate, and we've been going round and round with DOT about that. We found out the Wednesday before Thanksgiving that our indirect cost rate was increased to 100.6376%. So that's a big plus for us because we've been operating at a deficit on our own expenses. So that was very good to hear. A big part of that, big kudos go out to Savannah for providing a lot of information to the DOT auditors, as well as Christy at Balance Accounting, who did a lot of interpretation and the technical discussions on accounting with the auditors from DOT as well. So that was a big win. And Christy was probably more excited than anybody about that. She was cheering before we even got off the phone with the DOT folks. We received approval of our urbanized area boundary update just this afternoon from Federal Highway Administration. And big kudos go to Jaron for doing that. He did a really good job on it. It was very thorough. We're real close with all your jurisdictions, with your staff members. Some of y'all were required to do resolutions at your council or commission meetings to make those official. We only do this every 10 years, so it's not something we do on a regular basis. And obviously it changes every 10 years. And then for Jaron, it was his first one ever. So the fact that we received approval today is even more a tribute to Jaron, because these aren't even due until next Friday, December 29th. So we're way ahead of the game on that. And Jaron put a lot of time and effort into that. So that speaks volumes about his work on that. Y'all probably heard me talk a little bit before about MnDOT having some language in their planning grant contract that was approved today. That language was removed just before they sent us the contract. So the Minnesota Department of Administration basically allowed an exemption for MPOs. So that was a hard-fought battle with MnDOT and the Department of Administration. So that was good to see. It really wouldn't have affected us so much as it would have the other MPOs that are wholly within Minnesota, but we stood with all the MPOs that were opposed to that verbiage. So we all had to speak with one voice with MnDOT and the Department of Administration. North Dakota DOT's provided a copy of an updated 3C agreement. That's our continuing comprehensive and cooperative planning efforts that we do. That agreement is also signed by our transit provider. So in our case, it's both the city of Moorhead and the city of Fargo. There's a lot of issues with that. The reasoning for this agreement, they generally coincide with new transportation bills. But DOT said that the reason they're doing this is because we're now a TMA. And they've included some really quirky language with it. So we're going to have to go through that and have some discussion with them. We'll probably include our attorney on some of that. And I'll try to have all that hammered out before I bring it to y'all. I don't know that it would come in January, but if not January, then February. So just wanted to give y'all a heads up on that, because some of y'all may hear about that at Fargo and Moorhead through your transit folks. I've reached out to our attorney to try to determine our needs for general liability insurance. DOT has now, North Dakota DOT is requiring a $2 million coverage on their policies. We were not aware of this. Apparently this came about in July, and some of it was based on some legislative action that took place this year, and also some analysis from the risk management folks at DOT. As such, they're holding up our EV readiness study. Everything else is finally done, and now they found yet another thing to hold us up on. In this case, it's our liability. And the question about, in our case, and we don't have a problem with doing this when it's renewed in February, what we're having heartburn over is having to do an increase for 3 months is become rather costly. And we've been working with our insurance agent and the underwriters to try to come up with, you know, a rider or something that we can do on a temporary basis to cover us and still meet all the requirements. So I had to get our attorney to look at that as well. Hopefully we'll get that resolved. And of course we know what the amount's going to be. And I think we've already got a budget estimate for what that would be for 2024, but we're trying to tide over that without tearing a policy up that we basically still have time on. And you know, all of y'all have insurance on cars and homes and such, and know what a headache that is. So it's rather frustrating. And then it doesn't help that DOT seems to give us a different answer every time we ask about it too. So it's a little frustrating. That's why I asked the attorney to look at that. When we were talking about carryover amounts earlier, I the whole part of us transitioning to a TMA, you know, is tricky, and it's new for the North Dakota DOT. Of course, MnDOT has the Met Council, so it's old hat for them. We were really hoping that DOT was going to be a good partner with this, and we're finding that they're not being as good a partner as we had hoped. So they've become very adversarial on things, and they've questioned a lot of things, and they've not given us anything in writing or any, you know, when we've asked for materials, we haven't received them. So I suspect it's going to continue, and I'll probably need to have our attorney involved with some of that. So I wanted to let y'all know about that as well. I'm hoping that things will change a little bit. A lot of this is dictated by the Federal Highway Administration. And the things that they seem to have, that they have the most heartburn with, are the few things that they control, and a lot of that is funding. So it's going to be a rather uphill battle, and I hoped it wouldn't be, but it's not going to be easy.
I know, like 2 years ago when we ran into that issue, they elevated back to the city commissions, and they wrote a letter to the DOT administrator.
We may get to that point.
So just keep that in mind, I'm sure.
I will, definitely.
Again, if it's, yes, you know, staff to staff butting heads.
Yeah. MPOs, by federal law, MPOs are forbidden to do any type of lobbying with either elected officials or state agents. So we're specifically limited to that. But you as policy board members can do so. Our offices are going to be closed next Monday and the following Monday for Christmas Day and New Year's Day. And just the last thing, we have election of officers in January on the agenda. According to our rotation, it's Cass County's turn to be the chair, and Clay County is scheduled to be vice chair. And as such, just to kind of wrap up, I would like y'all to join me in thanking Mr. Hendrickson for being chair this past year and doing such a great job. And we've provided here a little token of our gratitude for him. And that's all I have.
So that's the best Christmas present I'll get this year. I want to thank you all for your patience. It's been kind of a challenging year, but everybody did really well in supporting everyone. So just humbled by the experience. It's been a challenge, but it's been a good thing. So the next policy board meeting will be Thursday, January 8th at 4:00. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
A motion.
Second.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
So